Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCrit Podcast. What you're hearing in the background right now is the new theme music for the MCrit Podcast by my very good friend Sigrid Hahn. Now Sigrid and a few of my other friends have told me they do not like the techno music that formerly headed off the MCrit Podcast. So let me know what you think about the new theme music. I think it's kind of catchy. All right, today we are talking about cricothyrotomy. I have a couple of guests you'll hear from shortly. I have a couple of videos that go with the podcast. Cricothyrotomy is obviously an essential skill for any emergency physician. It is the ultimate fail-safe for an airway you cannot achieve any other way. It is the end point of the can't intubate, can't oxygenate situation. A lot of fear and trepidation accompany this procedure if you haven't performed many, and there aren't many EPs out there who have performed enough not to be a bit scared when this comes up. Hopefully we put some techniques out there that will allay some of your fear and make this a bit easier. Now, the most important thing you need to do to become good at this technique is to practice. Now, you're not going to be practicing on real patients because we don't see enough of them. Residents might graduate their residency without ever having performed a cricothyrotomy. And there are pig tracheas or sheep tracheas. I'll tell you, first of all, they're just disgusting. Second of all, after you make that initial cut, you don't get much more legitimate practice on that individual trachea. And third off, I don't really think they give an ideal representation of what it's like to perform on a human. Now, I found an article in the anesthesia literature a few years ago on a cricothyrotomy trainer you can make out of equipment available in any ED. That article link is in the show notes. Pictures are in the show notes as well. But essentially what you're doing is just taking some ventilator tubing, two rolls of tape, and a plastic bag. And that combination makes a crike trainer that I have found to teach very well the skills you will need for a real human. And you could practice thousands of times if you were that anal retentive until you had this procedure so locked into your muscle memory that it would never be a problem to perform. Once you get the technique down by practice, the only further thing you need is the will to make it happen. And I find this is the most difficult part of cricothyrotomy for most emergency physicians, is just convincing themselves that they must stick a knife into the patient's neck. For once they convince themselves, the actual procedure itself is not all that tough. The surgeons who trained me told me, if you ever need to perform an emergent cricothyrotomy, you just cut to air. You take your scalpel, you find the midline, and you keep cutting until you find air. This is absolutely true. If you just remember that mantra, you will not go wrong. As long as you are actually cutting around the area of the cricothyroid membrane, you will eventually find air. I am distinctly not a fan of the needle Selinger technique kits, and I will tell you why. They work wonderfully in the pig trachea. They work wonderfully on mannequins. I don't trust anything with a wire during a crash cricothyrotomy situation. I've seen too many wire situations go hideously awry in central line placements when the adrenaline is surging. The wires get bent, they get kinked, and then you're in trouble. Even in controlled settings, not adrenaline surge situations, these wire-based Selinger cric kits take a long time. 110 seconds in one study, longer in another. I'll put those in the show notes. That is way, way too long for a cricothyrotomy situation. A good open cric could be done in less than 20 seconds, even in fairly inexperienced hands, if you know the actual technique. I think we should be training emergency medicine residents on open cricothyrotomy performed with a scalpel. I am a fan of the classic technique, but I have two guests that we're going to talk to with two techniques that might be a bit easier if you haven't performed these frequently. Now, if you go to the blog, which of course is at blog.mcrit.org, you'll see a video I put together on three separate cricothyrotomy techniques. And those three techniques are the two-person cricothyrotomy. That's you and an assistant. The one-person cricothyrotomy where you have a little extra equipment such as a tracheal hook and a trousseau dilator, in addition, obviously, to your scalpel and whatever you're going to stick in the hole, which preferably, for me, is always going to be a 6-trach as opposed to an endotracheal tube, because A, they're more easily secured, and B, they fit into the airway a little bit easier, I've found. But if you don't have that, a 6-0 endotracheal tube will serve you very well, so long as you remember to not stick it in more than a centimeter or two past the cuff. They don't go into 21 when you're going through the neck. The last technique you'll see on the video is where you have nothing but an endotracheal tube and a scalpel. And that's the classic surgical technique, and that's there on the video as well. The last thing I'll leave you with before we start talking to our guest is that cricothyrotomy is a blind technique. Now, obviously, you look at the neck to make your initial incision, which for me is a vertical incision, and it is a fairly big vertical incision, going from the thyroid cartilage to just below, that's right, below, not above, below the cricoid cartilage. This will give you plenty of room. You do not want to be making a cosmetically perfect incision for a patient that is about to die. I then make a horizontal incision just above the cricoid cartilage. Make it generous. The bones will determine the limits of the incision. They'll do it for you. And if you're really where you're supposed to be on the cricothyroid membrane, you cannot puncture through the back without an exceedingly large amount of force, because there is a cartilaginous ring there. So as long as you're gentle with your scalpel, you will be bound on the sides and the back. From that point on, after incisions, you don't need to see anything. It is a blind technique. You could close your eyes. And in fact, when I train my residents on this little vent tube trainer I talk about, I force them to shut their eyes at this point, because you should be able to do this without looking. This will keep you from getting petrified when blood wells up into the incision, as it always does. It doesn't matter, because from this point on, you're not looking. Your finger is in the hole you just made through the cricothyroid membrane. Video speaks for itself. Take a look. All right, let's hear about some alternative techniques. Now, the first person you're going to hear from is a gentleman named Seth Manoick. Seth is a friend of mine, and Seth breathes, eats, and drinks airway. Well, he drinks airway and beer. Both of us were a little toasty during this interview. But that aside, Seth is a really great guy. He did an emergency medicine residency. He worked as an emergency physician for many years, and then realized he wanted to do more critical care. So he went back and did an anesthesia critical care fellowship, which he is in the midst of completing now. But since he wanted to make absolutely sure there are no certification issues, he actually chose to sign up for an internal medicine critical care fellowship following his anesthesia critical care fellowship. So when he is finished, he will have 3 years of critical care training in addition to his many years working as a board certified residency trained emergency physician. Yes, folks, he is insane. All right, let's hear from Seth about a different method of performing cricothyrotomy, the fiber optic stylet aided cricothyrotomy.
What we developed in lab, again, this is using sheep. But what we did was we took a single puncture through the cricothyroid membrane, and through that we put the Levitan stylet. And once we got in with the Levitan stylet, what we thought we were going to be doing is looking. And what we saw was that, oh, this transilluminates. And so we could see the light dome even in a well-lit room, in a sheep trachea covered with hair, by the way, beyond the point that we shaved, which is only right over the membrane. And so we'd see the light dome. And then what we realized is, wow, you can take this Levitan stylet and you can move the trachea side to side. And if you go side to side with this handle, this stylet, and the trachea goes side to side, well, shit, that's in the trachea. There's no place else it can be, right? And if you go side to side in the skin, the Levitan moves the skin, tents the skin like you got a nail through your hand. That happened to a friend when I was growing up. Well, then shit, you're in the paratracheal tissues. You better not thread any catheter over that. So that's another way. And the other thing that we saw was this, is the way to see with the Levitan, because you just punch it through a little bit of blood, is to rub, and you can do this with any fiber optic, rub the optic on the mucosa. So take it, displace it anteriorly against the trachea, and you rub that optic on the mucosa, and suddenly you can see. But what you also notice is when you do that, you feel those rings. You feel those rings way more than you feel it with a bougie, because you're actually using the handle to lever it against the trachea. You can even trap the tip of that Levitan against the tracheal rings and move it back and forth, right? Okay, that's all fine and good. People are probably saying, well, what do you do now? Well, you actually did something before, which is you took a Cook Melker that comes with this kit, the Cook Seldinger kit, which is takes just too damn long. There was an Austrian study published in Anesthesiology. Took people an average of 110 seconds to do that. That's a dead patient with a dead brain. But you can take that kit, and you can take the Cook cuffed catheter that comes in that kit, put it over the Levitan, it fits perfectly. So once you've found you're in the trachea, and you could do it four ways, again, you can see the transillumination, you can move the trachea side to side, you can trap the rings and brrrp with your finger, and really feel satisfied, and you can take a look, and you'll see it's round. You see mucus hanging from it. In our article, we have a nice picture of mucus hanging down from the anterior trachea. And hell, you're in, and you just thread that tube, and it goes right in. No issue, because it goes right through that hole. It fits perfectly, you know, over the Levitan.
So let me stop you there, Seth, just to recount. So Seth is saying that, okay, maybe you have a catheter in because you took the wimpy way out and you wanted to reoxygenate the patient before you did a surgical technique. Or maybe you didn't. Maybe you're starting this fresh. And you make a incision through the skin and through the cricoid membrane. And now you have a hole between the environment and the patient's trachea. And now what you do is you stick in a fiber optic stylet. Now he's talking about the Levitan scope. And the Levitan scope is a short fiber optic device. This will work just as well with the Bonfi device, which is very similar, except it's longer, or any of the fiber optic stylets.
Except, just to say, friends of mine have looked at the pediatric Bonfis. Rigidity does matter, and the pediatric Bonfis is a little bit, maybe a little too wimpy to get through to do this job, so be aware of that.
All right, so pediatric Bonfis out, but any of the adult fiber optic stylets, and he says preload on, and what he's talking about is a commercial device in a Seldinger Technique Cric kit, so a cricothyrotomy, it's essentially looks like a trach, but it has a more tapered tip to make it easier.
And it's got a cuff, which is a nice thing because it's going to be an official airway for 3 days for you.
There you go. So it's essentially a tracheostomy device, but specifically made for a Seldinger technique. He's saying, you know, bastardize that kit, steal just that portion of it, put it on your scope, whichever fiber optic stylet you're using. Or, and what I would think would be more likely in my ED, a 6.5 or a 6.0 endotracheal tube, which we have the Bonfi scope, so it'll fit on there just fine. But one way or another, you have either an endotracheal tube or a trach type device. And I don't see any reason this wouldn't work for a standard 6.0. You have that on there. You pop your fiber optic stylet through your hole into the trachea. And now the first thing you do before you advance is you confirm. Now Seth has given you a number of ways of confirming you're in there. He talked about transillumination. You ratchet that bad boy back so that the tip of the fiber optic stylet is touching the trachea. It's gonna shine light through the trachea and through the skin. You're gonna see a bright light in the midline. You're gonna be very happy with yourself. He's also saying you're gonna feel the tracheal rings on the tip of that device, which you're now, since you're levering it back, gonna feel even more than a bougie. That's a rigid device. You should feel those rings. Down there, you're going to see carina or rings. It's not gonna look like an esophagus if you have any experience at all.
And you don't even need to see. You just need to use every other aspect of these devices. It's almost a formality to see.
He's saying if you're in the wrong place and you ratchet that back, what you're gonna see is you're gonna see the device sticking out of the skin.
Because
if you're not in the trachea, then you're in the soft tissues and you're gonna know right away.
We did that when we were learning.
There you go. So he's saying you're going to know it's in there. And once you know it's in there, then you just advance your either your kit cricoid device or your endotracheal tube or your formal trach. And one way or another, since you have a rigid piece of steel sitting in that airway, it can't go anywhere else except where you want it to go. Would you say that's fair, Seth?
I think that's fair. Let me make a couple of comments. I think one thing that's different about the Melker, and it makes it perfect, And listen, get your, you know, every hospital has it. They're on all the anesthesia carts, actually, even though no one ever uses them. Go steal a few of those and keep them around. But they have it. It has a taper tip. And that taper tip makes it fit real nice and get real nice through that little hole you had to Levitan through. It really does not require a much bigger hole than the Levitan or whatever essentially 5mm optical stylet that you use requires, or 4.9 or 4.5, whatever it is. But one thing that we also figured out, and you know, we didn't publish this, but we're just fooling around a little bit, is you can take that optical stylet, you can put your finger down where it goes into the cricoid membrane, and you can move it side to side. And surgeons call this blunt dissection, right? And you can make that hole bigger. You just can.
So you're saying instead of dicking around with any device to spread that membrane to make your, use a hard steel stylet to actually make your hole large enough.
That's correct. And you can, you know, once you get it in, you can just move it side to side, up and down. And it's going to be hard to do from the tip. And what we found is, if you take your finger and you hold it on the stylet, it won't bend at the point where you're doing this. You can expand that hole. So if you're going to use a 602, if you're going to use, you know, a 5mm ID Shiley, for example, if you're going to use, you know, any other thing Scott mentioned, I think you need to make that hole a little bigger, because that, again, that Melker is really tapered to go in perfectly. So if that's the case, that's fine. You move it side to side, up and down. You roll it around a little bit. But you got to keep your finger at the point where it goes in the skin, so the stylet keeps its form, and that's it. And I think, you know, at that point you have a workable hole. You know you're in the right place. You slide that forward, and bam, you have a lot of confidence.
Now, if you go to the blog under the show notes, you'll see a video of Seth actually performing this procedure on a sheep with the Levitan scope and the cricoid tube from the Melker kit. So Seth discussed the fiber optic stylet aided cricothyrotomy. Let's say you don't have one of those, or let's say you don't feel you could really get one together in time for a crash crike. What then? What could you do to make this procedure easier? Well, everyone, and I mean everyone, should have a bougie in their department. They should have many bougies. They should have a plethora of bougies. Bougies rule. They will save your butt in a trauma intubation, in a low glottic visualization intubation, in a tube exchange. You should be using bougies. Get damn bougies in your department. So, Darren Brody from the University of New Mexico, where he's an attending physician, where he's an associate professor of emergency medicine, where he's the medical director of PHI Air Medical, where he's a man obsessed with airway issues and pre-hospital medicine. Well, Darren has a bougie-aided cricothyrotomy. This is really, really good stuff. So let's hear from Darren. You have a very innovative technique for ED cricothyrotomy. I saw your video. I loved it. I think this is just brilliant. Why don't you tell us a little bit about bougie cricothyrotomy?
Well, our concept, and you know, it sounds like, you know, several folks have investigated this and developed this simultaneously. If you look in the literature, there's at least two other groups that have reported on the same thing. Some people call it a three-step crike. We're calling it a bougie-aided crike. So our concept is, you know, whether you want to go straight to a horizontal incision, whether you want to make a vertical incision first, you know, whether you call yourself traditional or rapid four-step, the point is that once you make your incision, you pass a bougie, and we're generally at this point using an adult bougie. I know some people have played around with using the pediatric bougie for this as well, but I don't have confidence in that yet myself to recommend it. But we put in an adult bougie. You instantaneously know if you're in the right place, just as you would using a bougie from above, except you're dealing with much shorter distances of insertion to get hold up. Once you're in and confirm that you're not in a false passage, you can also let go. Blood and other issues don't obscure you, and you thread your tube over the bougie. The only issue is if you're using that adult bougie, you are restricted to, depending on the brand of the bougie, some you might get a 5.5 over, but most of them you are going to be restricted to a size 6 or larger endotracheal tube or Shiley. So the patient has to be big enough to allow that size tube to pass through the cricothyroid membrane.
That's fantastic. Now, is there any dilation being done, even with a finger?
Generally, yes, just blunt dilation with a finger. And then with a fairly stiff bougie in place, you know, it's remarkable that you can get a larger tube through than you might think you could if you were trying to pass it without the help of an introducer. Of course, you want to use some caution that you're not, you know, causing significant cricoid injury when you put it in. Not that that can't be fixed later if you save a life, but you want to use some caution.
Now, let me just make sure the listeners understand what you mean by holdup. Now, this is actually, you're threading the bougie in and very gently inserting it until it won't go any further. And if that's a reasonable distance, you know you're in the tracheobronchial tree. Am I correct?
Correct. Well, we talk about going, when you're traditionally using a bougie, going from above during laryngoscopy in that class three airway, the idea is that hopefully you will be able to detect tactile a sense of the tracheal rings. If you appreciate that, you don't have to go for holdup. The problem is that even though some studies would say 90% of the time they feel holdup, you know, my hands with gloves on, I just don't appreciate it to that extent. So there's a significant proportion of the time you don't know based on that tactile sense if you're in the trachea. So what you then do is you advance the bougie further until you meet some gentle resistance at the carina or maybe just a little bit into a mainstem bronchus. And what we tell people going in from above in an adult is if you've gotten to 40 centimeters in a adult patient and you haven't felt holdup, I mean, it's kind of a sword swallowing act at that point, you must be in the esophagus going into the stomach. So you can do the same thing when you do a crike, but because the distances are much shorter, because you're already entering in the neck as opposed to coming in all the way from the mouth, you're going to get holed up in a much shorter distance, probably in about 10 or 15 centimeters.
Now, we're going to show folks the video of the bougie crike you did on a cadaver, but they should know that if they go to your site, airway911.com, they could see an entire free lesson on bougies. Take them through pretty much everything, right?
We do. I mean, it's bougie to for intubation, bougie for the crike, bougie for tube changing, bougie for tube confirmation, kind of the whole thing.
So we have a link, Darren's demonstration of the bougie-aided cricothyrotomy. You definitely want to check out the video, airway911.com. Check out the book as well, which you'll see on that site. That is the book we talked about a few weeks ago and gave away a copy of. And you will be hearing more from Darren and Seth in later episodes. I have some more airway discussions down on tape that we will be playing for you in upcoming episodes. All right, that is it for today. No more cricothyrotomy talk. In the future, you might hear about needle crikes, which could save your butt. I'm not a big fan of, but I think we should talk about them. So we'll talk about that later on this weekend. It is Friday here in New York City. I'm going to answer some listener questions. That'll be very brief, maybe 10, 12 minutes. Check that out. And we have some good stuff happening in the future. All right, keep the comments coming. Love hearing from you. My voice is fading. Too many lectures this week. So I will sign off now. Have a great weekend.